Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. Since the November 20 elections and the removal from office of President Trump in what he has, correctly I believe, called a coup, we Trump supporters have gone through many emotional swings. From the initial elation that Trump won overwhelmingly on Election Day evening, to the later shock and depression that Joe Biden won with millions of votes that appeared suddenly and seemingly out of nowhere early the next morning. And these swings, from hope and trust in our system to anxiety and fear, as we have over and over again witnessed this coup being carried out and then covered up. Just who did this and how remains unknown, but they could be from different elements within our society, among them the entrenched establishment, so-called deep state or swamp of our government, and its allies in control of the mainstream media, big tech, social media platforms, the Democratic Party, oligarchs and their corporations, and from international communist and globalist forces. These are the people worshiping world government. This couldn't really be happening in the United States of America, could it? So many of us have gasped again and again. But indeed, it could, and we believe it has. Most of us have kept up hope that first the integrity of the electoral system would prevail and right the wrongs that the corrupt Democratic Party achieved via lawsuits in courts and elected officials to put in place so that the events that swept Joe Biden and other Democrats into office would be revealed and corrected. That didn't happen. Then we believed our judicial system would do this for us. That didn't happen. And we were stunned to see that even our Supreme Court was on the side of the conspirators and validated the election results by refusing to even consider the massive evidence of fraud. Then some people believed our military would step in to seize voting machines and ballots and oversee credible recounts and investigations. That didn't happen either. And now, in the aftermath of the staggering political upheaval and disaster, from our standpoint, we are left wondering just how bad and how fast things are going to get. And I must admit, for the first time in my life, I began to think about the possibility of where I might emigrate so that I might be able to live out my days in relative peace and freedom. It's all almost too much to bear at times. I still want to stay and fight. I still want to believe that, as President Trump's attorney and former New York City mayor and federal prosecutor Rudy Giuliani has said, there are a lot of, quote, good people, unquote, in our country who won't stand for this madness. But the notion is getting harder and harder to believe as we have witnessed and suffered one defeat politically after another, and as the communist globalist forces arrayed against us with their incredible wealth and power have prevailed again and again. The Republic is dead, a longtime friend of mine in his 80s observed to me recently. I disagree. I believe the American Republic is still here, but it's hanging by a thread. Now that the coup to get rid of Trump and install Biden was successful, the political left and its allied forces I mentioned above have launched an unrelenting onslaught against our nation to wipe out once and for all America as we have known it. And I know this all sounds just too incredible to believe. Most Americans are going about their business. Things seem normal. Stock market keeps going up. Home values are rising. But for how much longer, I have to wonder. Many Americans, dumbed down as they are by years of brainwashing from our leftist-dominated public education system, popular culture, and media, are still asleep to the dangers we are facing today. Most of them didn't see it, but last year, the World Economic Forum, that organization of business, government, and globalist elites who gather every year in Davos, Switzerland, and discuss how they will reshape and run the New World Order they talk about so much, put out a public service video ad which claimed that within 10 years, quote, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, unquote. There was such an uproar over it that the WEF removed the video. One website called it a, quote, blueprint for tyranny, unquote. But it was a telling example of what they have in store for the world if they can get enough control. Now, with the help of the COVID-19 world pandemic, which some say communist China was the source of and released intentionally, these same elites are calling for a, quote, great reset of world political, economic, and social orders, which they hope to bring about and control, redistributing your wealth, eliminating your rights and freedoms, not theirs. They claim this is all for our own good. But in reality, it's an old story, a cabal of powerful elites controlling everyone else and dividing up the spoils. What we are witnessing here in America is a Marxist-Leninist-Maoist revolution, which, if it succeeds, means radical changes for Americans in the years ahead that few of us would actually want and none of us would be better off with. Yet so many are asleep to this grave danger we are facing. It's both distressing and deeply depressing to me. Much as I want to keep on fighting and keep a positive attitude, it's becoming harder and harder to do that. I sincerely hope I'm wrong about all this, and the forces of good in this country will prevail in the end. But right now, at least, it's difficult for me to believe, with all the bad news that just keeps on coming. Let's look at a few examples of what I'm talking about. Most of you who have studied this know that President Biden, Joe Biden, is the epitome of corruption, with his family members having raked in millions in lucrative business deals using Biden's position as vice president as influence and privilege. We have Joe Biden flying into the Ukraine a few years back while he was vice president and demanding the then Ukrainian government fire a prosecutor investigating Biden's son Hunter, who at the time was a board member of the Ukrainian energy firm Burisma, for money laundering, along with other corruption allegations against Burisma. Biden even brags about this publicly while appearing in a video at the Council on Foreign Relations, in which he relates he threatened to withhold $1 billion in U.S. aid if the prosecutor was not fired before Biden left the country in 6 hours after delivering the ultimatum. Biden then laughs, acknowledging that the Ukrainians complied, and the prosecutor, whom Biden claimed was somehow corrupt without offering any evidence, was dismissed. Was there any investigation of this by our vaunted Federal Bureau of Investigation? None that I know of. Lately, we are told the FBI is investigating the taxes of Biden's son and brother or brothers. To date, nothing has come of that. Nor has the FBI done much, if anything, about the revelations on Hunter Biden's laptop he abandoned at a Delaware computer store. On the laptop are emails in which Hunter reportedly complains to a family member that Joe Biden was demanding 50% of all monies paid to Hunter. The FBI has been in possession of that laptop for some 16 months now and was silent about it all through Trump's impeachment trial over Trump asking the new Ukrainian president to look into the Burisma matter. The FBI, which worked diligently with other members of the swamp to find evidence of corruption by Trump and didn't, is clearly under the control of the deep state. Here's another example of that. It's a report by One American News Network March 4 on FBI Director Christopher Wray's testimony before Congress that his agency couldn't find any evidence there were members of the communist anarchist group Antifa present during the disturbance and breach at the U.S. Capitol building on January 6. Rudy Giuliani has stated that there were believed to be some 150 or more Antifa people present. Play soundbite one, please.
The director of the FBI telling the Senate that he has not seen any proof of Antifa's involvement in the January 6 protest. However, as One America's Pearson Sharp explains, not only is there ample evidence of Antifa's role, but the FBI itself has charged one of its members for inciting the violence.
Continuing the witch hunt against conservatives and President Trump supporters, on Tuesday, the Senate Judiciary Committee interviewed the head of the FBI about the January 6th protests at the Capitol. It was Director Christopher Wray's first appearance before the committee since the protests 2 months ago, and the Senate probed Wray on what he knew about the attacks beforehand. Democrats naturally painted the events of the day as part of a massive right-wing attempt to overthrow the installation of Beijing Biden. But what was surprising is that Christopher Wray, the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and I stress that last word, investigation, agreed with Democrats. In fact, the director flat out denied that the FBI had seen any evidence of Antifa involvement in the violence at the Capitol.
You did not see Antifa or left-wing groups playing a significant role in the January 6th insurrection.
Certainly, while we're equal opportunity in looking for violent extremism of any ideology, we have not to date seen any evidence of anarchist violent extremists or people subscribing to Antifa in connection with the 6th. That doesn't mean we're not looking, and we'll continue to look, but at the moment, we have not seen that.
Now, we here at One America News don't have the billions in taxpayer funding that the FBI does. But after a quick 5-second Google search, we were able to find information on a man named John Sullivan. For a quick refresher, Sullivan is the radical left-wing, anti-Trump, self-proclaimed Antifa member who led crowds into the Capitol on January 6th, exploited the tragic shooting of Ashley Babbitt to sell to CNN, and called on protesters to start a revolution and remove President Trump from office by force. This is the same man who's now facing federal charges for violent entry, civil disorder, and disorderly conduct for his actions at the Capitol. Even the Justice Department has pointed out that Sullivan positioned himself at the front of, quote, multiple confrontations with officers at multiple locations and made gleeful exhortations about burning and breaking things. This is from the Justice Department itself. And yet somehow, Christopher Wray, again, the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, is somehow unaware of a major left-wing agitator instigating violence at the Capitol. Now that's either staggering incompetence or willful deceit. So which is it? Is the head of the FBI really bad at his job, or is he a liar? Maybe this clip of John Sullivan calling on rioters to burn the Capitol down will help jog his memory.
My name's John Sullivan. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah. My group is Insurgents USA. We about to burn this down. We out there strapped. We out there ready to burn that down. We out there to defend our self. We gotta defend ourselves now too. We do, because power to the people. We gotta fucking rip Trump out of that office right over there, fucking pull him out that shit. Nah, we ain't about fucking waiting till the next election. We about to go get that motherfucker.
Or perhaps this image of Sullivan wearing a Trump hat on January 6th, claiming that he is counter intel. Or screenshots of his conversations with his leftist followers, calling on them to burn the Capitol and show the power of the people united. Other members on his chat group admitted that they disguised themselves as Trump supporters by wearing pro-American shirts and logos. One member said he was at the front of the crowd at the Capitol and specifically said there were a, quote, large sum of anti-Trumpers there with him. Maybe they were some of these black-clad protesters who were hiding under a tree so they could quickly change into pro-Trump outfits, with someone even telling the person filming to delete that. How is the head of the FBI unaware of any of this basic information? Information that has been widely known and shared for 2 months. It's clear that the Senate hearings have no intention of getting to the truth, which is that radical anti-Trump extremists attacked the Capitol on January 6th in an effort to discredit President Trump and his supporters. Instead, the Senate, and now worryingly, the FBI's goal, appears to be a campaign of misinformation designed to attack and vilify conservatives in America, branding 75 million Republicans and Trump supporters as white supremacists. But 75 million Americans know better. History will show it was the Democrats and not the Republicans who called for this violence. And no amount of doctored evidence or falsified testimonies will change that. For One America News, I'm Pearson Sharp.
Let's hope that history will show this. But as Ronald Reagan once remarked, the judgment of history depends on who writes it. From the laptop emails of Hunter Biden and other revelations of the past year, there is evidence Joe Biden and his family members have received millions of dollars from entities associated with Communist China. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich has stated that Joe Biden has been paid at least $900,000 by Communist China since leaving office in 2017. Was any of this an issue during Biden's presidential campaign? Only in the alternative media. As President Trump observed, if Biden and VP Kamala Harris were elected, Communist China would own the U.S. I'd say Trump was right. You may be aware that last week U.S. and Communist Chinese Party officials met for high-level talks in Anchorage, Alaska. From what was reported, these several days of meetings appear to have been another example of that. The Chinese know they own Joe Biden and can easily push him around, as well as his administration and now America as a whole. Here's former Trump advisor Steve Bannon's take on the meetings delivered on Bannon's America's Voice News program, March 19. Please play soundbite 2.
There you have it right there. Yesterday, an inflection point in American history, ladies and gentlemen. As we said, you know, the New York Times yesterday had this going to be a big pivotal reset. You know, we're going to talk diplomacy, not tariffs. Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, who's a clerk, treated like a clerk by the Chinese. New York Times today, interesting, not one thing on the page, not one thing on the page about Alaska. It shows you how embarrassed the New York Times is by this fiasco. Jake Sullivan's a messenger boy. Tony Blinken's a clerk. And here's the reason the Chinese talk to them with no respect. Not simply the fact that they now, in the open, have no respect for the United States of America and for Joe Biden, a United States of America under Joe Biden. They treat Blinken like a clerk, Sullivan like a messenger boy, and it gets back to the National Pulse's reporting. It gets back to the fact they know they're compromised, right? It's the way you talk to people when they're advisors to you or consultants to you or whatever. Hey, this is the way it's going to be. If you know the way diplomacy goes, that was absolutely in your face. You're not going to talk to us. You're in no position of power. You talk the theory of Thucydides' trap, which Donald Trump, right, and our first guest, Michael Anton, we're going to bring him a second, deputy over at the National Security Council with under President Trump. This was the standing up to China. You know, the same crew flew to the United States and saw us the first couple of days of President Trump when he was the president-elect, when he took the call from Taiwan, and is outlined in the book Chaos Under Heaven by Josh Rogan. They came over and lectured us. We said, hey, we listened politely and then said, hey, new sheriff in town. Everything's on the table. And then fired off the football immediately. Right? Yesterday was an embarrassment. It shows you we are heading into very treacherous waters. It was also reaffirmed with their purchases, as the Wall Street Journal just announced, more purchases of oil, massive oil purchases from guess where? Iran and Venezuela, their allies in Pakistan. Erdogan just comes in today and says, hey, Putin, Biden should have never tried to disrespect Putin yesterday. Russia, Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, and the vassal state of North Korea and the vassal state of Venezuela. That's it. That's your lineup right now on the Eurasian landmass and in their foothold, their toehold in Latin America.
American journalist David Tsang has stated that he believes the Chinese Communist Party, Communist China, is preparing to invade and take over Taiwan. Not too long ago, or fairly recently, some of the country's, the Communist China's diplomats told Biden that there was a red line concerning Taiwan and that Biden was not to interfere. They have increased their defense budget, as Zhang notes, about 6% for this coming year, indicating they are increasingly strengthening their military. It's not just the CCP that owns Biden, however. We have the swamp here in the U.S., but more importantly, one of the swamp's key leaders, allies, and supporters, the radical left-wing billionaire George Soros. Soros, whose Open Society Foundation's network promotes no borders anywhere, contributed $500,000. He contributed $500,000 to Biden's presidential campaign. I believe that's just him personally. And likely there was more, much more, through a network of rich leftists Soros headed that put up some $270 million to pour into the campaigns of Democrats in 2020. It's been reported that numerous people on Soros' payroll and staffs were advising the Biden presidential transition team. Soros has been meddling in the politics of nations around the world for many years, creating political and economic chaos and short-selling currencies. He's been kicked out of quite a few countries, among them Russia, Poland, Hungary, the country of his birth where he was born with the name Georgi Swartz. Hungary has declared Soros an enemy of the state. Another country opposing Soros and his foundations is the Philippines. I read that Philippine President Duterte told Soros that there was a special place in hell for Soros, and if he so much as set foot in the Philippines, Duterte would personally take Soros there, and that Duterte had placed a bounty on Soros' head in the Philippines. Most recently, the military junta that took over in a coup in Myanmar recently, formerly known as Burma, seized the bank accounts of Soros' Open Society Foundations there. I understand that's several million dollars, and arrested the organization's director, along with issuing arrest warrants for 11 more of its staff. The junta accuses Soros' organization of funding and promoting civil unrest in Myanmar. Here in America, Soros is treated like a god, using his vast fortune to buy ownership stakes in many media organizations who treat him reverently, and taking over direction of the Democratic Party and steering it hard to the left, and pouring nearly $250 million into the Marxist-Leninist-Maoist Black Lives Matter movement. President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, has also stated that Soros is the main funder of Antifa and Black Lives Matter. The website NOQReport.com reported on December 5, quote, "In a plot twist that's so unbelievable we had to check multiple sources to confirm, neo-Marxist billionaire George Soros just named Lord Mark Malik Brown as president of Open Society Foundations. Brown is the former CEO of Smartmatic, the company deeply tied to voter fraud company Dominion Voting Systems," unquote. We should say Smartmatic is a company linked to Dominion voter fraud allegations. To date, no conclusive proof has been uncovered publicly. Are we ever going to see full, real forensic audits of these voting machines? Not just Dominion, but the others use? I understand Dominion and other voting machines are used in at least 20 U.S. states. Or it's just Dominion alone in 20 states. I'm not sure. And after all this time, will there be anything significant in the way of vote fraud revealed? For its part, Dominion continues to adamantly deny any wrongdoing and is suing Giuliani, pro-Trump attorney Sidney Powell, and others for more than $1 billion each over the vote fraud allegations they have made about Dominion and Smartmatic, a version or versions of which have been used in American voting machines, as I understand it. It's also worth noting that UBS Securities, a Swiss company with subsidiaries based in New York and Beijing, reportedly purchased a $400 million interest in Staple Street Capital, the parent company of Dominion, which is headquartered – Dominion is headquartered in Toronto, Canada, and they did that in October 2020. that $400 million stake. It's been alleged that the money came from an entity or entities associated with Communist China. It's my understanding that the UBS New York subsidiary paid this money, and it's a privately held company, so it's not clear where the money exactly came from. But reportedly, that subsidiary of UBS has three Chinese board members, one of whom, I think his name is Yi Zhang, has worked for the Central Bank of Communist China, as well as also serving on the Beijing subsidiary board of UBS. And the other two also serve on both boards of the companies. It's not surprising, given his ties with Soros, that one of the first things President Biden did was override Trump's border protection measures and throw open the U.S. borders. The results are predictable. And again, support my contention that the Republic is hanging by a thread. Here's a video report on Biden's immigration policies, again by One American News Network, on March 19. Biden and Soros want to end America as we have known it. To quote Joe Biden, "America is an idea. We've never lived up to it, but we've never walked away from it," close quote, Biden says. Play soundbite three, please.
Joe Biden's assault on America's southern border is reaching new heights as he welcomes millions of new illegal immigrants into the country. One America's Pearson Sharp has more.
The crisis at the southern border is at a level never before imagined. The scale of the disaster unfolding thanks to Joe Biden's self-destructive policies is growing exponentially, and it's costing Americans more than they know. Since Biden was installed, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens, including members of drug cartels, human smugglers, and sex traffickers, even child traffickers, criminals, and, yes, terrorists, have crossed our southern border. And before anyone tries to claim that's just xenophobic fake news, last week, four suspected terrorists were captured trying to cross the border. Imagine how many more have already gotten across. All without any opposition, and now with a big fat bonus stimulus check for their efforts.
It's the policies that have been adopted by the Biden administration that have escalated the number of children coming across the border, where the Biden administration has made it clear that if you are an unaccompanied child, you will be allowed to come into the United States.
What other country in the world rewards illegal entry with such generosity? For the past 2 years, One America News has worked hard to track the number of illegal aliens crossing the border. During that time, immigration has fluctuated up and down, but thanks to President Trump's efforts to protect our country, the number of illegal aliens was kept mostly under control. As a result, we were able to use information from the Department of Homeland Security and U.S. Border Patrol to calculate roughly the number of illegal aliens sneaking into our country every day. But now that Biden has thrown out the welcome mat to absolutely anyone and everyone, the numbers are spiraling out of control so fast we can't even calculate them. The percentages are simply off the charts, with immigration surging over 500% in some areas, with current numbers suggesting there could be over 2 million new illegal aliens in the country by the end of this year. And that's just the ones we know about. Border Patrol agents warn that for every two illegals that they catch, another one slips by. So that 2 million illegals could easily be 3 or 4 million. During President Trump's administration, we averaged about 400,000 illegals across the border each year. Since Biden was installed in January, we've already hit 400,000 illegals crossed in less than 2 months. And these illegals aren't cheap either, with each one costing taxpayers roughly $12,000 a year, or $420 billion every year. And that's a conservative estimate. Where does this end? Joe Biden has single-handedly decided that the United States has open borders.
First of all, the idea that Joe Biden said come, because I heard the other day that they're coming because they know I'm a nice guy and I won't do
what
Trump did.
They're saying this.
Yeah.
He claims that's not the case, but his policies tell a different story. And even going back to his campaign, you can hear him flat out admit that he wants illegals to surge the border.
I would, in fact, make sure that there is, we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
It's much worse than that, however. Back in 2018, Biden laid out his revolutionary vision for America while sitting next to the current Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who you can see smiling along in agreement. Biden explained that not only is the wave of mass immigration never going to stop, but that he doesn't want it to stop. He claims that an onslaught of illegal aliens is one of the things that we as Americans can be most proud of. It's simply too appalling to believe. But yet, this is the reality of Biden's America. See for yourself.
Not only our Muslim communities, but African communities, Asian communities, Hispanic communities, and the wave still continues. It's not going to stop, nor should we want it to stop. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things I think we can be most proud of. An unrelenting stream of immigration, nonstop. Folks like me who were Caucasian of European descent, for the first time in 2017, will be in an absolute minority in the United States of America. Absolute minority. Fewer than 50% of the people in America from then and on will be white European stock. That's not a bad thing. That's a source of our strength.
An unrelenting stream of immigration, making Americans of European descent an absolute minority forevermore in America, which for some reason Biden says is the source of our strength. So he somehow believes the more criminals we have crossing our border and the less we have in common, the stronger we are. If this illegal invasion continues, we won't have a nation. At this rate, we almost don't already. By definition, you can't have a country without borders. And with Democrats pushing the catastrophic bill, H.R. 1, hordes of illegal aliens will be able to vote, erasing the distinction between legal and illegal residents and turning real Americans into second-class citizens. And that's exactly what Beijing Biden and the radical Democrats want, because the only people willing to vote for their extremist, nation-killing policies are criminals and illegal aliens. For One America News, I'm Pearson Sharp.
While we still have First Amendment freedoms of speech in the USA, that too is a real threat to the communists and globalists seeking to enslave us, and will be gone soon if they get their way. Their way is to enact H.R. 1 in Congress, which has already passed the House, with every single Democrat voting but one for it. And that bill legitimizes all the crazy illegal actions that helped throw the 2020 election for the Democrats, like doing away with voter ID requirements, universal mail-in ballots, ballot harvesting, and so on. If this is made law, I fear our Supreme Court will rubber stamp its validity, and then many millions of illegal aliens and other non-citizens will be able to vote with impunity to the communists and globalists. I'm sorry, be able to vote so that communists and globalists can ensure their control of the country forever. Besides our judiciary largely abandoning us and supporting suppression of the efforts to prove election fraud, the state legislatures, especially in the key swing states where most of the allegations of election fraud have been directed and which decided the election, can't seem to get much done in correcting the abuses of power and authority that decided the elections. Although we are seeing significant efforts to have real forensic audits performed and corrective legislation passed in these states and elsewhere, I despair that enough will be accomplished in time to save us in the next elections, assuming we still have a country for those elections. And that's also assuming Republicans can get defeat H.R. 1 in Congress. Here's a report and commentary by lawyer Debbie Georgiatis on her video podcast series America Can We Talk on the efforts by the Arizona state legislature to get a forensic audit done on voting machines and ballots in that state after all these months since the election. The county supervisors, the boards of elections have been fighting this tooth and nail, refusing to comply with legislative subpoenas to do this. Supposedly they're close to getting it done, but reports abound in the swing states, including Arizona, about ballot shredding and burning, deleted files on voting machines, threats against whistleblowers, and other strange and illegal actions which would serve to obscure and eliminate evidence of election fraud. Play soundbite four, please.
Now, the Senate, back to Arizona Senate, saying, you know what? You got it. Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, we want to see the machines. We want to see the ballots. So that's what they're trying to get that to come forward now. I mean, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors is not acting like any innocent actor would act. They're not. They're blocking. So now the big news finally, was that the Arizona Senate finally stepped in, passed a bill to grant the legislature the authority to subpoena election records. So now they have the subpoena out. The Senate is rocking and rolling, going to try to actually get access to the machines and the ballots. And according the big story what ended up happening was today some other interested individuals in the county stopped by the facility, the Maricopa County Tabulation and Election Center. The Maricopa County Tabulation and Election Center, interested parties, stopped by on Saturday, found the doors wide open, which seems like that would not be consistent with protecting the information inside, and other people in the county stopped by the same place, found huge piles of ballots in the dumpster outside the facility. It appeared someone had ordered the ballots to be shredded. And on top of that, a mysterious fire happened at the home or the ranch of one of the individuals involved with the Maricopa County Ballot Board. And I'll close this because I'm out of time. I want to close this topic and tell you why I talked about it today. We are facing, in this country, the most unrelenting, determined mission of some people on the American left to say America will not ever get to the truth about what happened in the 2020 elections. We're entitled to cheat. We're entitled to defy the elected representatives in the Senate. We're entitled, apparently, to shred ballots. And now you have the Democrats in Washington saying, and we're going to put in place H.R. 1 so you'll never again have a fair election in the future of all of America. And you're going to have Biden facilitating overriding the state's right under the Constitution to create election law, because that's what the Constitution says, all an excuse of, well, you know, we're just trying to protect against potential racism. People, we have on the left in Washington and in the left across this country a deeply determined leftist mentality. They stole this election, and they're damn straight going to make sure that they get the full benefit of having done that, meaning they are going to put forth every piece of legislation they can possibly muster and get through. They're going to block review of everything they did, and it is incumbent on patriots, Republicans, conservatives to take action now in every single state with respect to election fraud.
Now let's listen to excerpts from interviews last week by citizen journalists with Patrick Byrne, founder and former CEO of Overstock.com, who's been working with pro-Trump lawyer Sidney Powell on election fraud issues. These interviews in their entirety can be watched by accessing them from Byrne's channel on telegram.org. That's O-R-G. Byrne recently released an ebook he wrote about the 2020 presidential election titled The Deep Rig: How Election Fraud Cost Donald J. Trump the White House, by a man who did not vote for him. Byrne makes it clear that he usually votes libertarian and did not vote for Trump at this time, but he's been very upset about what he sees happening in the country during and after the election. This ebook is available from Byrne's website, deepcapture.com, for $4.99. I have bought it and I'm reading it. Its basic premise is that Trump had the power to seize the voting machines and ballots in the swing states and have U.S. law enforcement or military oversee recounts and investigations with full transparency, but failed to do so on advice of his lawyers, and it cost him the election. Byrne is knowledgeable in cybersecurity and computer matters, and whatever you may think of his views, this is a gripping read, which I recommend. Here's some audio from an interview with Byrne on March 15th by Jeremy Ryan Slate. Play soundbite 5, please.
One of the things that really surprised me is, we keep hearing about it in the news, you know, no widespread election fraud. There's no widespread election fraud. They keep using this idea of widespread, but the thing you break down in your book is you say it actually comes down to six states, but more realistically, just six cities. I guess why was that the strategy, and why was that what was focused on?
Well, it's very yes. There doesn't need to be widespread election fraud. Any political scientist can explain this. There's really six counties in America. You don't have to steal the United States. You don't need to steal across the United States. You need to steal like crazy in six counties. And these six counties are Las Vegas, which is Clark County, Phoenix, Maricopa County, Milwaukee, Detroit, Philly, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And if you just steal in those six places, those are the anchor cities of six swing states. So if you steal the anchor city, you flip the swing state, which flips the Electoral College, which flips the national election. So in summary, to steal the United States, you don't need to steal across the United States. You need to steal in six locations. And that will, through the magic of the Electoral College system, that flips the whole country. And those six locations are, what do you know? Surprise, surprise. On the evening of November 3rd, we had this unprecedented event. I've never heard of people stopping their vote counting in America. Never heard of that. But vote counting stopped in six cities in America on the night of November 3rd. Just stopped with no, mm-hmm. not really any good explanations. And those six cities were Las Vegas, Phoenix, Milwaukee, Detroit, Philly, and Atlanta. How odd. What an odd coincidence. Well, it's not a coincidence. It happened, of course, because part of the rigging, and this happened in other countries, that the rigging, when they rig the election, if it's bad enough, they actually have to shut down the vote counting for 3 hours and do certain things. So It's not a coincidence that the six cities that any political scientist can tell you are the six cities that if you cheat like crazy there, it ripples through the system and flips the whole nation, national vote. Those six cities were exactly the places that had these weird things. Like in Atlanta, a water pipe burst, forced them to evacuate the state farm.
AKA an overflowing urinal.
It wasn't overflowing. But the night it happened, it was allegedly a water pipe that had burst, and we have to empty the State Farm Arena in downtown Atlanta. It was so dangerous. And they get everyone out of the building for 3 hours. And when they bring them back in, well, what do you know? Joe Biden's vote suddenly exploded 500,000 votes. Ooh, how odd. Well, that thing happened in six cities. It's almost like an insult to my intelligence, frankly. Mm-hmm. And so when people say, where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? To even say that, they have to look past some known facts that are headline events from the night of November 3rd. Anyone with a room temperature IQ should be able to look at this constellation of facts. There are six cities that have this special property. They are Democratic stronghold anchor cities of swing states. And what do you know, on election night, those six places shut down for 3 hours. That should really be tipping, that smells like skunk in a very big way to me. And then when you start digging into why they shut down and what happened when they were shut down, the pattern becomes very clear. That's the main point where they rigged the election.
So I guess from that standpoint, you were talking about how some of the servers connected and stuff like that, and you had traced some of the IPs and whatnot. But I guess like looking at it, like what actually happened in that time period there when they were shut down? Like what occurred that changed everything?
Well, there's a number of different levels to this. There's retail, wholesale, and industrial. Mm-hmm. And at the retail level, we're talking about, dead people voting, a dead guy voting. At the wholesale level, you're talking about systems where they created where, say, all kinds of, you know, hundreds or even a couple thousand dead people vote in certain states. But at the wholesale level, we're talking about the possible injection of tens or much more, even more likely hundreds of thousands of votes into each of these areas. And then when you get even really, the truth is there's very strong evidence at this point that there was international vote flipping. So which probably approaches 3 million votes. But let's just start with, and I mean really good. I'm now a believer in, and this is in the book. I threw some information in the book about this. We've been keeping it out of the, I'm letting this work through the official processes, but I now am a strong believer that there's been international, very strong international involvement in this. But let me give you an example of the kind of things that went on. In Nevada, if you went to the Secretary of State website and registered to vote, all your information was sent to Pakistan to a company called Cavtech, which is a corporation in Pakistan that does cyber stuff, but it's very much associated with Pakistani intelligence, which is called Pakistan ISI. And all your, so why were they taking our voter rolls? It was very important for live voter rolls to be held overseas, because what they are doing is, so when they get to the point, see, there's also shaving between candidates. Mm-hmm. And I think that all these techniques were used, and Donald Trump, and I say this not as a Trump guy, I think all these techniques were used, and Trump was still winning. And that's what Sydney means when she says he broke the algorithm. He was still winning, which is why they had to do the thing where they shut down. And then they do things like this. They'll take a bunch of blank votes and slip it into the machine. Now, as those votes go through, the machine needs to know, it needs to check. You can't just do it with blank votes. It needs to check off that each one is associated with a actual legitimate voter. Well, we believe the systems were actually going online in real time, going to Pakistan or wherever, and checking who has not voted yet. Okay, Joe Blow. Okay, check that off. We'll attribute this to Joe Blow. Okay, who's the next one? Here's the next blank. So as they're feeding in a stack of 50 blank ballots running through the machine, maybe 50 counterfeit blank ballots running through the machine's going online to check overseas. So we're seeing that kind of weird packet traffic between these machines and overseas connections in the middle of just processing votes. So there's all kinds of funky stuff that needs to be explored. Really inappropriate stuff. And these are machines that aren't even allegedly connected to the internet. So that's an example. There's international, there's that kind of stuff internationally. It looks like there's man in the middle attacks internationally where they're getting between two computers that are talking to each other, and the computer, they inject themselves, the hacker does, and then they can kind of imitate each side, and they're a man in the middle, and they alter the conversation between computers. There's all kinds of hacking techniques that are manifested in what we've come across, as well as all the normal stuff, you know, as well as counterfeit ballots in Georgia, as well as, I mean, there's this, it's like there's a cocktail of techniques, and the cocktail was mixed differently in each state. That's another important thing. Mixed differently based on local conditions and what you could get away with. But it was mixed. There's a cocktail of techniques of these different levels, and they all show up in those six states in different proportions.
Now here's more from later on in this same interview. Play soundbite six, please.
The next question I had for you on that, like you mentioned, you know, your two hypotheses towards the end of the book of, you know, kind of the reasoning a lot of this happened. And, I know, HR1, which has been being discussed now, is kind of seems to me like almost like, hey, we did all this stuff. It wasn't legal at the time, but now it's going to be legal in the future. I guess based on, you know, number one, how dangerous is HR1 to, you know, our voting? And number two, like, how does that fit in with your hypothesis?
Well, my hypothesis that I finished the book, hypothesis one is this was all a psyop. This whole 2020 was a psyop, of which the last two steps are the crisis of a rigged election and then normalization. And that a deep state is behind it. Secondly, the stronger hypothesis, the deep state is doing this in conjunction with China, because China's fingerprints are all over this. Well, if that's true, I point out, you're going to see, you know, if the left knows that they rigged this, if they rigged this and they know it, they know that they're not going to win future elections. So they have to lock in the rig. And how they're going to do that is going to change the laws and they're going to change the electorate. And they're going to change the laws to take all this goofy COVID emergency rules about voting, like absentee, unlimited absentee and ballot harvesting and all this, and institutionalize it. And the second thing they're going to do is change the electorate with changing the immigration rules. And to the extent Biden does those things, I think it's confirming the theory that they rigged this and mm-hmm. they know that they have to change everything in order to lock in their rig.
And here's some audio of Byrne discussing the election on March 16 when he was interviewed by Pete Santilli on The Pete Santilli Show. Play soundbite 7, please.
I thought that what he needed to do, what he should do, is send in a federal force under sign that finding, and the evidence was overwhelming. His own FBI and CISA had declared on the day of the election there's foreign entanglement in this through advanced persistent actor attacks out of Iran. He could have just done that. He signed that piece of paper and then sent a federal force in to open ballot boxes in 6 counties. You know, these guys, when they sold us all these machines, always say there's always a paper ballot backup. There's always a paper ballot backup. It's a fail safe. No one. Well, it was time to hold them to their word. And he should have sent a federal force in to 6 counties. They could have opened the boxes, recounted the ballots. And in 2 days, we would have had our answer. I think what it would have shown is in each of those 6 counties, there were 300 to 500,000 goofy votes. If you did all the forensics on the computers and all the different ways that goofy votes, illegitimate votes enter the system from blank ballots being put into the machine and the machine being programmed to read all blank ballots to allocate them to Biden, to there's all these different layers to the international vote flipping. I think that they would have found 300 to 500, maybe even 800,000 vote discrepancy in some places, and that would have created the context for us to open up these machines across the country. And I think if Americans had opened these machines across the country, you would have found out that there is a built-in 3 to 5% or maybe more cheating, rigging going on. And it would have, well, one thing that would have happened, I think it would have picked up 4 House seats in Virginia, 2 House seats in Nevada. He probably would have picked, I worked with some scientists who've been studying this for a quarter of a century. Their estimate was he would have picked up about 25 seats in the House and 5 or 6 seats in the Senate. He would have had a significant majority in both houses and would have been president again. And all he had to do, in my view, and I don't mean to be, he's a 74-year-old man who was, I think, a little tired. But all he had to do, I think that history threw him a great hanging curveball. Mm-hmm. If he'd taken the risk and signed that thing that Sidney and Mike were telling him to sign and unleash our approach, I think it was his Mount Rushmore moment. Because what would have happened all over the country is Americans would have discovered our voting system lacks so much integrity. There's so much cheating going on. And mm-hmm. we would have found that when we opened the ballot boxes and counted the actual ballots, we would have discovered an enormous amount of cheating. He let the bat rest on his shoulders. I think he had a Mount Rushmore moment, and if he had swung, it would have changed the face of America for that discovery to be made. I think we would have discovered that we're a much less lefty society than we think we are, and that there's been a constant gradual edging of us towards left-wing results. But I think that they're significantly fake, like what happened in 2018 in Orange County. All that kind of stuff that has started happening in this country, we would have found out that isn't really us. That isn't what our votes really are. Or that's these elites are manipulating the system to tell us as they take us towards, you know, the thing that they all have in common, those groups you mentioned, the Silicon Valley tech, the left, and the Chinese, what they all have in common is their view of society is one where it's an authoritarian view where a small group of elites make the decisions for society. Mm-hmm. That's what they have in common.
Byrne states that Trump is a 74-year-old man who was tired out from all the election chaos he was going through. Hey, a 20-year-old would have been tired out from all that. But anyway, Byrne, Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and others supporting Trump still believe in our judiciary, including the Supreme Court. They believe that it is not largely compromised and essentially owned and controlled by the deep state and perhaps even the CCP. I'd sure like to believe that myself. So here we are, closing in on 5 months after the election, and still no definitive proof we can bring before the American people of election fraud that changed the outcome of the presidential election and other elections on November 3. Well, as you can see here, we do have a lot of good people working to expose election fraud and perhaps, even at this late date, change the outcome of the elections. But I have my doubts. I'm not holding my breath. Let's all hope and fervently pray that we eventually get some real and significant results, however long and however much effort it takes. Additionally, let's each of us do everything we can individually to oppose this leftist revolution. That's a wrap for our show this week. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot. You can also listen to this and earlier show podcasts of The Jim Benson Show at bbsradio.com. Have a good evening.